Israeli settlements, colonies, suffocated in a very small area, and all the land, including the green area around us, is being confiscated by Israel, and it's out of reach to us, meaning we can't grow as a community, and we can't, you know, think of a future if there is nowhere else to go. They're clearly pushing us out of the country. And with the isolation from Bethlehem, and since October 7th, the restriction of movement even to other Palestinian towns, it truly feels like a city isolated. There's so much unemployment. And right now, all it takes for Israel is to close two checkpoints, and Bethlehem becomes another Gaza, another isolated block. This is true for other Palestinian blocks, towns, and villages.
We have 10 seconds.
So it is a really sad reality, and we're really anxious that this war in Gaza could expand to the West Bank.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, Reverend Munther Isaac, Palestinian Christian theologian, pastor at the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church in Bethlehem. He's speaking tonight at the historic Riverside Church here in New York. His address titled Silence is Complicity. That does it for our show. To see our podcast, video, and audio, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours.
Oh. You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on KBOO
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election. We want to know, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Fill out our survey by August 14th, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card. Full rules on our website. At the end of August, we'll report back with the community's priorities. Find that survey online at bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024. That's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an audit of the Oregon Health Authority finds unclear results after millions were spent on behavioral health care.
Portland International Airport's new terminal opens.
And a new political party in Oregon could put RFK Jr. onto the November ballot.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Oregon Health Authority, or OHA, failed to show results after spending tens of millions of dollars. That's according to a recently released audit obtained through public records by the Oregon Capital Chronicle. Beginning in 2021, Oregon lawmakers gave tens of millions of dollars in funding to the OHA to increase the behavioral health workforce. The money was designed to grow the field, but also to better reach marginalized communities in rural areas where mental health care is much harder to access. But the auditors say it is unclear how much progress the funding created because the OHA did not design performance metrics to show its impact. That makes it difficult to demonstrate the long-term benefits to lawmakers and communities. Auditors also found what were labeled severe delays in award distribution, as it took over 5 months to finalize a contract in one instance. Whilst interviewing OHA employees, the auditors found that an understaffed contracting department, poor communication, staff turnover, and pressure to get funding out to providers all contributed to the poor execution. While the outcomes are fuzzy, auditors did acknowledge that the money went out widely, covering 40 clinical supervision grants, paying over 250 student loans, funding nearly 60 peer support organizations, and more. Several suggestions were made as part of the audit. Those include establishing measurements to show the effectiveness of the programs, improving data collection, and consistent requirements for grant recipients to show their results. Tim Hyder, a spokesman for the OHA, said that the agency is implementing the audit's suggestions by creating surveys for grant recipients and tracking the state's behavioral health workforce capacity.
Today, the Portland International Airport unveiled a brand new main terminal after years of construction. The grand opening celebration took place yesterday and included Oregon Governor Tina Kotek and local tribal leaders. According to Kotek's office, the project expanded the main terminal to 1 million square feet of space, nearly doubling the terminal's capacity. Its design features a slatted wood ceiling made of Douglas fir, which was completely sourced within 300 miles of PDX and harvested in a sustainable fashion. The slatted design intentionally lets natural light in for the terminal's 72 live trees, with a goal of immersing travelers in the Pacific Northwest landscape. In addition to a sprawling new roof and tree displays, the terminal will offer a number of new restaurants located both before and after security checkpoints. The iconic PDX carpet is also present around check-in counters and security areas. This is only the first phase of construction, as the old security areas will be turned into new exit lanes, with an expected completion date in early 2026.
Home care workers in Washington State are pushing for better wages and benefits. Eric Tegetoff spoke with their union, SEIU 775, to learn more about their negotiations.
Washington home caregivers are negotiating with the state on wages and benefits. The caregivers union SEIU 775 is in talks with the Consumer Direct Care Network of Washington through the Consumer Directed Employer Rate Setting Board. Nellie Prieto is a caregiver and executive board member for SEIU 775. She says home caregivers are struggling with the cost of living and inflation, which is compounded when they struggle to get 40 hours of work.
If we don't have that, then whatever we're getting paid, it's hard for us to survive on something like that.
SEIU is looking to ensure wages of at least $25 per hour, continued affordable health coverage even when a caregiver's hours vary month to month, an increase in retirement benefits, and more paid time off and mileage reimbursement. The Consumer Directed Employer Rate Setting Board's next meeting is Monday. Prieto says recruitment and retention of caregivers is among the union's biggest issues.
If they don't get paid enough, well, of course, they're going to go ahead and look for something different. And it's always a big turnover.
Prieto says caregivers are invested in their jobs and ensuring they provide their clients the care they need.
Just because we love our clients and we want to continue doing this work, it doesn't mean that we don't deserve to have a dignified living ourselves for our families and for us to make sure that we take care of ourselves.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. could appear on the ballot this November in Oregon. He may also show up on ballots in Mississippi, North Carolina, and Hawaii under a new political party called We the People. He initially announced a Democratic presidential bid, but dropped it last October to file as an independent. We the People started with the express goal to nominate Kennedy and Nicole Shanahan, a tech entrepreneur and his running mate. Independent presidential candidates can achieve ballot access by either filing individually through a certain number of signatures or as the nominee of a political party. Since no other party endorsed Kennedy, he created his own. His website reads, quote, "With these party filings, we're reducing the number of valid signatures we need to get on the ballot nationwide," end quote. The Oregon chapter of We the People says they submitted 54,000 signatures to the Secretary of State in July, almost double the necessary amount to be certified. The party must establish bylaws, select officers, and conduct a nominating process by August 27th to complete certification. Kennedy says he's on the cusp of achieving this status in all 50 states. However, lawsuits pose threats to his qualifications to appear on other ballots. Judge Christina Riba ruled Kennedy falsely claimed residency in New York on Monday, stating that he did so, quote, for the purpose of maintaining his voter registration and furthering his political candidacy, end quote. Kennedy will not be the only third-party candidate on the ballot. The Oregon Progressive Party says it will nominate social critic and philosopher Cornel West.
Gun violence in Portland continues to decline. A year ago, the city averaged 116 shootings per month. The average is now 76 per month, a nearly 35% decline since Mayor Ted Wheeler declared a gun violence emergency last July. City analyst Ryan D'Ambrosio attributes the decline to increased funding from the city as well as federal pandemic money for violence prevention programs. These programs provide outreach and counseling to people at risk of gun violence and victims. They're operated by the city's Office of Violence Prevention. However, these programs are now threatened by significant funding cuts as federal dollars dry up and the city anticipates budget shortfalls. Mike Benner, a Portland Police Bureau spokesperson, said the Bureau's gun crimes team and increased officer foot and bicycle patrols in areas with increased crime have also played a role in the decrease.
Some city council candidates are pursuing a renter's bill of rights. They formed a coalition uniting the Democratic Socialists of America and the Renters Action Network around universal eviction representation. Coalition members hope Portland will follow cities like Tacoma, which approved a massive overhaul of the city's rental policies last year. They're proposing 9 policy proposals designed to protect renters and increase their political power. Tacoma's model has informed policies like a 6-month notice for raising rent and eviction protections for children and education workers during the school year. Included in the Bill of Rights is a resurrection of eviction representation for all. The proposal to fund lawyers for tenants facing eviction lost overwhelmingly as a ballot measure last year in Multnomah County. Measure 26238 would have placed a 0.75% tax on capital gains, representing profits from the sale of property, stocks, and bonds from a business. The tax was set to raise between $12 and $15 million per year. The proposed tax was criticized for potentially affecting small businesses and lower and middle class homeowners. Now, coalition members are not tying eviction representation to any particular funding mechanism. They hope that by proposing the goal and working backwards on funding, they can avoid the mistakes of Measure 26238. So far, 11 city council candidates have pledged support for the Bill of Rights. They include Jamie Dunphy from District 1, Jennifer Park, Samir Kanal, Chris Olson, and Jonathan Ticini from District 2, Tiffany Koyama Lane, Angelita Murillo, and Theo Hathaway Saner from District 3, as well as Mitch Green and Andra Vlavin from District 4. Durrell Kinsey-Bay is the sole mayoral candidate so far to come out in support. More than 22,000 Oregonians faced eviction in 2023. A PSU study entitled Evicted in Oregon found only a quarter of those renters found legal support.
Arizona Democrats hope an abortion rights ballot measure will boost turnout. Senate Democrats tell the Justice Department to step up protections for election workers. And former Colorado election official Tina Peters is found guilty. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is what a winning campaign looks like.
Yes.
This is what democracy looks like.
Yes. Vera Hernandez with Arizona for Abortion Access celebrates the certification of enough signatures to put a constitutional amendment on this November's ballot. Democrats hope the popular referendum will boost voter turnout in the battleground state, where abortions are banned after 15 weeks. Voters will decide similar measures in at least 6 other states. That includes Missouri, where Republican lawmakers want to raise the share of votes needed to approve an amendment. State Representative Alex Riley says they want to protect the Missouri Constitution from out-of-state groups.
We want to make sure that when changes are being made, they aren't being made by hyper-partisan interest groups, that it's something that has a degree of broad consensus across the state of Missouri.
A wave of successful ballot measures in several states show the popularity of protecting abortion rights and legalizing recreational marijuana. Senate Democrats are urging the Department of Justice to take more action to protect election workers, citing ongoing threats and abusive conduct. The Federal Election Threats Task Force has looked into dozens of cases, but lead investigator John Keller says the majority fail to meet the standard for prosecution, which is unlawful violence.
It threatens the foundation of our democracy. Death threats are criminal, and they will be prosecuted.
Nearly 40% of election workers nationwide say they've experienced threats or harassment. The United Auto Workers Union has filed a formal complaint against former President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk. They take issue with Trump publicly celebrating union busting during their live-streamed conversation on X.
You want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay, you're all gone. You're all gone.
It's illegal to fire workers who threaten to strike. Meanwhile, Minnesota Governor and Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Walz met Tuesday with members of AFSCME, the country's largest public sector union.
And it's not just a saying, it's a fact. When unions are strong, America's strong.
Walz, a retired teacher, says he is the first union member to be on a presidential ticket since Ronald Reagan, who once led the Screen Actors Guild. Former Colorado election official Tina Peters has been found guilty on several felonies related to election tampering. Prosecutors say Peters violated state law when she allowed unauthorized access to election equipment and records, posting the results online. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold says Peters was trying to prove Trump's big lie that the election was stolen.
Election denialism, disinformation truly is dangerous. And that's why it's so important we speak out and speak up to any type of election disinformation.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth with Holly Miller from ALS Northwest and Elise Schumach from the Rose City Book Club. They'll be speaking with Ken Jones about their annual fundraiser. At 6, it's Exploration with Michio Kaku. Then at 7, Eco Justice Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with clouds going into the morning and a low of 61 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 77 degrees. Today in history, in 1935, U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt signs the Social Security Act, creating a government pension for the retired. The quote of the day is from the television chef and author Julia Child, who said, quote, "My, I get so depressed after a poor meal. That's why I can never stay in England for more than a week."
A new native-led lab in Billings, Montana is up and running. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Indigenous-led laboratory is open for business in Billings, the largest city in Montana. The lab is starting small with plans to scale up. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche reports the Native American Development Corporation recently cut the ribbon on its new lab in downtown Billings.
The lab officially opened in July and is capable of processing blood and urine for drug content. Native American Development Corporation CEO Leonard Smith says this facility answers the need for more testing capacity, and it's also unique in the region as a Native-led laboratory.
We felt that it would bring the kind of return that we need to become sustainable and continue to offer good services to our community.
Following the ribbon cutting, clinical laboratory scientist Stephanie Uffelman shows Smith and other NADC leadership the one-room laboratory located inside a St. John's United building for seniors. Uffelman stops in front of a boxy white machine labeled Joey and opens a drawer to reveal a tray of empty tubes.
So each patient sample will sit in a vial.
Uffelman named both of the lab's analyzers after characters from the TV show Friends. She gestures over to the second machine, named after Joey's fake identical twin.
And this guy, in the beginning, was actually giving me a lot of problems. So he was my problem child, my Carl.
She says the machines can turn results within a period of 24 to 72 hours.
These are what's going to produce the most revenue for us.
Native American Development Corporation CEO Leonard Smith says the capabilities of the lab will grow. He says the lab will be available to the NADC's Urban Indian Health and Wellness Center in addition to the community at large, with plans to expand its services from substance use testing to other metrics.
You know, we hope to be able to market to the tribes as well as just private sector entities, you know. I just take great pride in seeing it at this point.
For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche in Billings, Montana.
Native voting rights advocates contend two Arizona laws have made it more difficult for Native voters to be civically engaged despite already existing structural barriers. Alex Gonzalez reports.
Patty Ferguson Bonney with the Indian Legal Clinic at Arizona State University says House Bills 2492 and 2243 will unfairly impact Native voters. HB 2492 mandates that voters present evidence of a physical mailing address, which Ferguson Bonney says will present problems for many Native people who simply don't have one. HB 2243 requires county recorders to terminate a voter's registration if they suspect someone isn't a U.S. citizen. The pieces of legislation are being challenged in court, but Ferguson Bonney says education and outreach are also key.
Trying to translate to tribal people in their own terms, in their own communities, why it's important to participate in voting can already be a challenge when you're dealing with legal infrastructure that has tried to deny your existence.
Ferguson Bonney says that when it comes to Native voting, there have been steps forward and then backwards.
There's some feeling within Indian country and among some Native people is, why should I be participating in this process? But when you recognize that people who are elected actually have touch points in your everyday life, even if you're in a remote location because of this federal trust relationship.
Ferguson Bonney adds that realities on Native reservations are often very different than off the reservation, and contends that's something that should be taken into account by elected officials when creating policy.
That was Alex Gonzalez reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Some federal incentives to bring internet access to Indian country didn't actually require tribal participation, according to a new report. The Federal Communications Commission's 2020 Rural Digital Opportunity Fund awarded over $9 billion to cable and satellite operators, phone companies, and others to deploy broadband in areas lacking it. A new report from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance shows that program included no requirement for tribal consent or engagement before companies placed bids. Author Jessica Auer says that left some tribes, especially those with their own broadband projects, in what she calls a bureaucratic boondoggle that led to tension and confusion.
They're required to spend resources and staff time trying to contest these awards, confronted by outside providers who feel that they have a mandate and a right to build on sovereign tribal lands.
Auer says not including tribal nations at the table is, in many cases, considered a violation of tribal sovereignty. According to a 2022 study, households in tribal areas are about 24% less likely to have access to broadband internet than others. In some cases, tribes are able to build these projects themselves. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe was awarded a $40 million grant to connect over 1,500 tribal households with fiber internet access and an LTE network. Auer says that's preferable to a company building infrastructure in unfamiliar terrain, which can be detrimental.
But I just can't think that it necessarily makes them the most long-term effective and sustainable answer when they have so little knowledge and familiarity with local realities.
That was Jessica Auer, a tribal broadband policy analyst.
Consumer prices rose less than 3% for the first time in more than 3 years. That's according to a Bureau of Labor Statistics report issued today. This could increase the chance of the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates next month. Now that inflation seems to be coming under control, the Feds can reduce borrowing costs to try to increase job growth. Inflation rates did recently spike at a 23-year high. But the labor report shows prices rose little on a monthly basis and increased only 2.9% for the 12 months ending in July. Economists were expecting close to those figures. The cost of owning and renting a home rose 0.4%, which accounted for nearly 90% of the monthly increase. Christopher Rupke, chief economist for FWD Bonds LLC, said, quote, "Any Fed official waiting for a little more data to make the decision on whether to cut interest rates got it in spades this morning," end quote. The Consumer Price Index, or CPI, measures the average change in prices for a collection of commonly purchased goods and services. After briefly rising at the start of the year, it has cooled down noticeably. The Fed wanted to see more sustained progress in slowing inflation before loosening monetary policy. There was recent concern when the labor market slowed and unemployment rose more sharply than expected. July had a weaker than expected jobs report, with an estimated 114,000 jobs added and a jump in unemployment to 4.3%. That sent the stock market into a tailspin last week as recession fears increased.
It's the changing of the sports season, and KBOO's Grant Button has updates and analysis for us on the edition of KBOO Sports News.
The NFL season is rapidly approaching, and preseason games and practices are in full swing. Literally, as Seattle star receiver DK Metcalf hit his own teammate over the head with his helmet. The Detroit Lions and New York Giants are also guilty of fighting, as there were multiple bench-clearing shuffles and punches thrown during their joint team practices, resulting in $200,000 fines for both organizations. Unfortunately, every NFL preseason players get hurt, which San Francisco can definitely attest to given that 23 players missed their most recent practice last Thursday. Promising rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy is out for the entire season due to a torn meniscus in his right knee. He played 30 snaps and threw a touchdown on the final play in the Vikings' preseason opening game on Saturday against the Las Vegas Raiders. What a bummer. You know what else is a bummer? Olympic gymnast Jordan Chiles being stripped from her bronze medal by the Court of Arbitration for Sport panel. The story begins with the judges mistakenly calculating her score, which the U.S. asked for them to review. After the review, the judges realized their mistake and awarded her the bronze medal, allowing her to stand on the podium proudly, joining her teammate Simone Biles, who finished second in the event. However, the Romanian Gymnastics Association appealed the ruling, arguing that the U.S.'s decision to review came 4 seconds later than the one-minute review time limit. This was in an effort to give their competitor, Anna Barbosu, the bronze medal. They were successful in their efforts, as a court of arbitration ruled that the U.S. and Chiles should not have been allowed to review the call. The ruling comes despite the U.S. having video evidence that the appeal was filed within the one-minute window, and new evidence that suggests one of the supposedly impartial arbitration judges is actually a Romanian lawyer who has represented Romanian interests for years. USA Gymnastics is unsurprisingly appealing the ruling. Let's hope the Olympics will make this right. Despite Chiles' difficult situation and medal uncertainty, the U.S. still took home the most medals at this year's Paris Olympics, 126, and tied with China for the most gold medals at 40. Finally, on a more personal note, like Chase Buttinger, the NBA-turned-pro volleyball player, I will also be moving on to my next journey at college. Before I go, however, I would just like to thank everybody working at KBOO, especially Althea Billings, who is the news director, and she has been a great companion to work alongside these last 3 years, and she's helped me learn to become a producer, anchor, how to write the news, and more. So I really appreciate the job she does with the news, and her own shows is incredible. So I just wanted to shout out the work that she is doing. I would also like to shout out KBOO as a whole. As a high school student, I never would have thought I would be given the opportunity to work at a radio station and be on air and be able to do the news, which, you know, can be difficult concepts to talk about, but I appreciate that KBOO, you know, was trusting and helped me work through challenges, and I just really, really appreciate their involvement with the community as well, and their underlying mission to help cover maybe not as heard stories, which I really, really resonates with me, and I really appreciate. So I just wanted to say a final thank you as I go off to my next journey to KBOO. I do plan to come back at some point, but it may be a while. So I just want to say thank you to KBOO and everybody working here. The work you are doing is fabulous. Thank you. For KBOO Sports News, I'm Grant Button.
Though KBOO news poet Dan Raphael rarely watches TV, he often feels like he's living there.
Even if the script's already written, we can't binge-watch the election yet. But we recently got a mid-season plot twist. Kamala and Coach Tim cheering crowds, big smiles, with Donnie grumbling about the lack of attention. There's 11 weeks to go. Something else is going to happen before the day. I'm more for living in the moment with an eye on the horizon. The Garden's narrative is more segmented. Raspberries done, blues nearing the end, dozens of plums pinky purpling. There's almost too many ripe tomatoes. Mid-August and already feel the day is getting shorter. Been a mild month so far. As usual, the weather folk are saying could maybe be a little rain in a few days just because they know many of us would like some. Politicians are a lot like weather folk. They say what you want to hear, what you've been missing, but they're just after the ratings called votes. Besides being more earth-friendly, we can't change the weather, but maybe we can change how our city and country give us results, not forecasts. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Eliza Yerkov, Grant Button, Dan Raphael, Ken Jones, Josh Salem, Reed Johnson, and Zachary Jones-Nuray. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Kathleen Shannon, and Mike Moen. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Eliza Yerkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can. Go to kboo.fm/give or text